Hi, I'm Dr. Pam Peek, and welcome to episode 145 of Her. And we are the podcast all about women, where we share the naked truth about her mind, her body, her life. Today, her character. You heard me right. This is going to be a fabulous episode. But first, just know that the episode of Her is made possible by our friends at Smarty Pants Women's Complete Vitamins. They're delicious once-a-day gummies that contain the complete vitamin, mineral, folate, and omega mix customized for women. Trust me, you won't forget to take them because they taste so great. To learn more, go to SmartyPantsVitamins.com. And here's a quick reminder to hop on over to iTunes after our episode and rate and review this wonderful podcast because I'm sitting here waiting to hear from you. Okay. All right. It's time for Her.
Her, the podcast.
The naked truth about women.
Her mind.
Her body.
Her life.
It's all about her.
Oh, my goodness gracious. What kind of character are you? How good are we? Ew. Do we even understand how to take that apart and make some sense of it for ourselves? Well, we have Dr. Christian Miller here to help explain this. And he has written a book. Go grab this book. I love it. The Character Gap. How good are we? Now there's a question. So Dr. Miller is the A.C. Reed Professor of Philosophy at Wake Forest University. He is philosophy director of the Beacon Project, funded by a very large grant, $4 million, from the Templeton Religion Trust, and is the past director of the Character Project, funded by almost $6 million in grants from the John Templeton Foundation and their World Charity Foundation. He's the author of over 75 papers, as well as 3 books on this character theme. Dr. Miller, welcome to the Her podcast.
Thank you so much for having me on.
So what the heck is character? I know that all of my audience out there are scratching their heads going, character, character. What the heck does that mean? Especially
after that introduction,
in these times where we have real characters running around in politics and otherwise. So help us understand this.
Sure. I hope I can say something after that introduction. That was very kind of you. So I think of character as our moral fiber. It's who we are, morally speaking. It's what leads us to think and feel and act in moral or sometimes immoral ways. So that's a very abstract way to describe. Let me try and make it a little bit more concrete. I think we can divide up character into 3 categories. We can talk about the good character traits, the virtues, things like honesty, compassion, courage, loyalty. There are the not-so-good character traits, the bad character traits, the vices, things like dishonesty and cruelty and cowardice. And then there's a third way of thinking about character, which is to say it's mixed. It's got some good sides and some bad sides, and that's the view I ultimately like the best. But just as a general introduction, I think we can think of character as either very good, very bad, or mixed.
Wow. Okay. Now, why should we even care about it? Why should we care about developing this good character, as you said?
Well, I mean, first and foremost, we already do. It seems like it's just inevitable that we care about character. We want our children to have good character. We want to work in an environment where there's good character of the people around us. We want to have good character in our leaders in society. But there's even more to be said on that question. So first of all, it's actually in our self-interest. It actually benefits us. So there are studies which indicate that the better person you are, the more things like positive mood go up, negative mood goes down, achievement goes up, success in school goes up. So lots of other things we care about in life are tied to having a good character. But I wouldn't want to just end it there because that makes it sound like it's all a matter of benefiting yourself and it's self-interested. So I think there's other reasons to care about good character too. One is it just makes the world a better place. You know, I want to live in a world where there's more honesty, where there's more compassion, where there's less cruelty, where there's less hatred. That's the world I want to live in, and that's a world where there's better character. So we should care about character. And then I'll give you one more reason just to end with, and that's that we find people of excellent character, of great or exemplary character, really inspiring. So whether that's someone like Jesus or Abraham Lincoln or Confucius or Gandhi, we might look to these examples of moral excellence and say, wow, there's something just really appealing about them, something that's so different than how I am, speaking for myself, Christian Miller, that I want to be more like them because I think that's something very, very admirable. And so I strive to become like them. So those are some reasons that come to mind.
Well, you know, I think part of good character is honesty. So what does, you know, you're an academic, what does the experimental research tell us about how honesty or good more generally, you know, being good, you know, people are? I mean, what is this about honesty?
Sure. So I think it's a great example. I'm actually, my next book is going to be on honesty. So I'm already thinking a lot about that. And I think that, first of all, honesty is a great example because it's pretty uncontroversial. We can, you know, quickly agree that that's a good thing, an important thing. We want our children to be honest, for example. But then there's this more empirical or scientific question about, well, how honest are people actually these days? And we might try and go about it answering it in different ways. We might look at the news, we might read history, we might look to religious texts. But my preferred approach is to look at carefully done experimental studies, which put people, big, you know, big groups of people, in different environments where they have an opportunity to cheat, for example, or lie or steal, and see what they do. Do they act honestly or not? So here's an example. One of my favorite studies to talk about, they had two groups of participants. One group of participants was taking a test where they would get 50 cents per correct answer. There were 20 problems, and they had no opportunity to cheat at all. So they just took this test, they finished it, they turned in their answer key, they got graded by the person in charge, they got paid, end of story. On average, they got about 7 problems correct out of 20. Another group, however, same test, same number of participants, same setup with 50 cents per correct answer. They all knew that, but they had an opportunity to cheat and get away with it, no questions asked, because they could take the test, grade it themselves, shred their answer key, and then just verbally report how many they got correct. So what do you think happened? 7 correct answers? No. 14, quote-unquote, correct answers in this
group. Oh, my.
So double. Now, it could be that this group was just so much smarter. They were just better at the test. That's possible, but I'm not going to buy that. I wouldn't wager any money on that. The much more likely explanation is that here was an opportunity that people saw to cheat and get away with it, not get caught, and benefit, make some more money. So what lesson do I extract from that? Well, you know, I don't want to draw grand conclusions from just one study. It needs to be replicated. There needs to be other studies of other situations and so forth. But when I look at the collective body of studies like this one, I come to the conclusion that that's not very honest. I mean, that kind of behavior shows a pattern where if people are given the opportunity to cheat and get away with it, not get caught, and benefit, they're likely going to do that. And an honest person wouldn't be like that.
Oh, my God. Is there any hope for us, Dr. Miller? Oh, my goodness gracious.
This didn't mean
sort
to be depressing.
Inherent in our personality and our character. I'm sitting here just wiping away the tears, and I have to put down the newspaper because that'll just make me cry some more. is there any hope for us?
Yes.
Come on, you know, seriously, what can we do to become better people?
Sure. So I want to say a couple things about that. First of all, my overall position is that we have a mixed character. It's not that we're vicious. The lesson of these studies is not to say that we're terrible people, we're kind of, you know, forever going to do the wrong thing. It's that we're mixed. We have some good sides and some bad sides. And furthermore, there's hope, because our character is not fixed in stone. It's not genetically hardwired. There can be progress. It's not going to be overnight progress, though, but slow, gradual progress over the course of weeks, months, and years. So let me illustrate that a little bit more concretely with that same kind of study we were talking about. So we said that there was a control group where they didn't have an opportunity to cheat. There was a second group where they had the opportunity to cheat, and they looks like they cheated a lot. Then experimenters started toying with this kind of setup, and they said, well, let's see what variables might make a difference. Can we introduce this or introduce that? So another group of researchers introduced a third group, which before they even took the tests, they signed an honor code. These were students. They signed an honor code for their school. Then they took the test. Then they had the opportunity to cheat, just like before, shred the answer key, say whatever they wanted to the experimenter. Lo and behold, there was no cheating detected.
The average
came back down to the same level as the control group. And so this was what lessons do I draw from this? Well, first of all, that's really fascinating. And it's not just limited to honor codes either. So instead of using an honor code, another group of researchers asked participants to recall as many of the Ten Commandments as they could. So same effect, cheating disappeared. So it looks like what's going on here is moral reminders help get us back on the right track. That if we're just kind of thinking about how can I make that money and is anyone going to catch me or not, then yeah, bad things can happen like cheating on the test. But if we have moral reminders to help refocus us on what's right and what's wrong, in this case, the Ten Commandments or the Honor Code or other reminders like that, then we're much more likely to behave well. So that would be one strategy I can recommend. I can talk about others as well, but the influence and the importance of moral reminders can be a big help.
Wow. You know what it really does? It kind of centers you. It's not like, you know, you're just sort of riffing all by your little lonesome, but in a way, those moral reminders are so terribly, terribly important. Anchor in morality. Yeah. To me, it's an anchor. It just reminds you, you know, kind of all over again, you know, who you should be and what this is really all about. I was going back to an interesting memory when you were talking about honesty. When I was a Girl Scout many years ago, when dinosaurs ruled the earth, I had my little cookies and everything. Now that I know what's in them, oh dear God, I was probably killing people, but that's okay. We'll just let that go. And I'm not kidding you. So I went up to some woman and I sold her, you know, a truckload of the cookies, and you know, you go door to door and whatever. And as I was coming down, I walked about a block and I was just looking at my little money and I realized the lady had given me, a way overpayment by accident. I think she slipped me a 20 instead of a 10 or something like that. And I had a moment and I was so young, you know, I had a moral moment, you know, and I said to myself, you know, what would happen if, you know, and I kind of went to the what would happen if place. And, you know, the most interesting thing happened, and that is that I just sort of, you know, I went to a place that felt right in my little, you know, self, where my prefrontal cortex hadn't even fully developed. I felt, you know, that I had been given enough of a sense of morality and morals from my parents and my living environment, where I knew immediately, like it was a knee-jerk response, that I had to give the money back. And I did. And when I went up to the lady and I handed back to her, first of all, you know, poor thing, I almost had a heart attack. It was like somebody was actually honest. And the second piece was she gave me half of that, which to me was, you know, a fortune.
Oh, wow.
As a little kid. And she just sort of congratulated me. This further anchored me in morality. It further anchored me, you know. And so, I think that, you know, what I worry about today is not a whole lot of that going on, right? I mean, am I just over reading this or am I reading the wrong newspapers? heck?
Let me, a couple of things there. Let me go back to your first point about how we really do care about morality. And then I'll also comment on your story too, which is really fascinating. I think one thing we learned from these studies, which is again, very optimistic, which is that just like you and us in your story, people do genuinely care about being a good person and doing the right thing. So it's just that sometimes that gets off base, or we lose focus and we get attracted by other things like monetary gain. But it's very encouraging that we're not starting from scratch. There's not a blank slate here. As early as 9 months, and certainly by 1 year old, there's good evidence that infants already have a kind of proto-moral system. They can discern, for example, fairness violations in their environment. So I think that's really good. And the more we can tap into that using moral reminders and other things, the better. So the second point I wanted to make was your story is fascinating for a number of reasons, one of which is that it mirrors what Abraham Lincoln did when he was younger. So there's this famous story about Lincoln, a true story, where he was working in a shop and someone overpaid for something in the shop, and he only discovered it after he'd closed the shop down, and he walked, I think, several miles to the house of the person who had overpaid him to return the money. And that's, you know, not just an interesting parallel to your story, but it also shows, I think, a second way where we might do better, which is to look to moral role models, moral heroes and exemplars like Lincoln, who can, you know, give us guidance and, you know, show us what it's like to be an honest person. Because after all, Lincoln is known most of all when it comes to morality for being a paradigm of honesty. So that's a second strategy. First was, moral reminders, remembering right and wrong. Secondly is look to people who have gone before us or the people in our lives who are paradigms or exemplars of living a good life and let them guide our lives.
Well, it also feels really good. I think people need to stay in touch with what feels right. You know, my stomach, kind of whoosh, like that. And I felt like the best way to do it was that, because when I even for a microsecond thought of like, oh, isn't this interesting? I didn't feel right. It felt terrible. It was a visceral feeling. It wasn't just an intellectual experience. It was a
good. So you might be in danger talking to a philosopher because my life is all about intellectual argumentation. But I actually have a lot of sympathy for what you just said. So philosophers tend to overemphasize reason and, you know, constructing arguments, and as if by figuring out the truth that will just be the end of the story. No. I mean, more and more so philosophers are joining psychologists and others and really appreciating the value of the emotions and our feelings and our experiences. And something like our intuition is not necessarily unreliable. It could actually be a very reliable guide to figuring out what's right and what's wrong. So I think that's very valuable, what you just said.
I love the way you framed that up. I mean, I just think this whole thing is fabulous. So we here at the Her podcast, with our very large female audience, have now dubbed you our resident philosopher. Do you love that? Okay, so you're going to be our philosopher. We have to touch upon you. Now, listen, honey, just read the headlines. We're going to be talking to you a whole lot because it's a mess. I'm just saying.
Don't get me in too much trouble.
Everyone out there, we've been talking to Dr. Christian Miller. He is the author of The Character Gap. How good are we? Love this book. Please, please, please. Now that he's our new resident philosopher, you better get the damn book, because now we have to understand where he's coming from. Hey, when's that honesty book coming out?
Oh, you put me on the spot. Probably not for another year or two. So
okay,
it's going to take a
problem.
While.
I was just sort of curious. We're patient. We're also honest.
I've got three kids.
And we're moral. And we're very good people, you know, on the overall. So listen, run out and get the book, The Character Gap, How Good Are We? And all I can say is, Dr. Miller, thank you for being on the Her podcast.
Thank you so much for having me. I really enjoyed our conversation.
Of course. Trust me, honey. We're going to be calling you back.
That sounds great.
Remember to catch every episode of Her out there. Just hit subscribe on iTunes or on our show page at RadioMD.com. Now, right now, run on over to iTunes, rate and review us, because I'm sitting here just waiting, twiddling my thumbs. I want to hear from you because I love your feedback. I'm Dr. Pam Peek. So follow me on Facebook at Dr. Pam Peek or on Twitter at Pam Peek MD. And you can also check out our Her Show page at RadioMD.com for all of our past episodes. Thanks for listening and stay well.